Welcome to the Beyond the Test podcast, where we connect you with professionals who are innovating their industry and share their stories of passion, self-awareness, and pursuing their dreams to learn what it takes to succeed in work and life beyond the test.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Beyond the Test podcast. If you're new to the show, we're your hosts, Michael Cohen, the Tech Rabbi,
and Ara Manzano, 11th grade student at Eula Boys High School.
As Director of Innovation at Eula Boys High School, this podcast was created as a response to a void that Ariel noticed.
I noticed that you can find podcasts if you work in industries like marketing, real estate, or finance. But what about if you don't know what you want to do? This is the podcast for you.
Whether you're a high school student or someone still searching for that dream profession, we hope the conversations here with our amazing guests will inspire you to think beyond the test. Today on the podcast, we have the chief evangelist for Alexa and Echo at Amazon. His name is Dave Izbitsky, and he is going to talk to us today about a lot of the great ways in which he is seeing technology evolve. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So we're really excited for this episode. For those that will end up hopefully listening to many episodes, this is the beginning of a really powerful project that is actually the brainchild of my co-host, Ariel Manzano. He is a 10th grader at Eula Boys High School, and he came up with the idea that it's not enough to just interview incredibly talented people, and it's not enough to create a podcast, but we need to understand a new type of audience that maybe isn't being focused on, which is high school students. So I want to introduce here to my left, my co-host, Ari Manzano.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
And we are going to get into the podcasting questions. And so the first question is one that I'm excited to ask because I'm excited to see how many different perspectives we'll get in the answering of it. And that is, how do you use creative thinking in a way that you see people not using it?
Oh, gosh. I feel like the creative process for me has always been an inability to just accept things the way they are, right? I know there's a Steve Jobs quote that talks about how anybody is capable of having impact, that the world in which we live in is just the ideas that somebody else had. And I think we all just take that for granted, right? That the house that you may be in, the building, the car that you may be listening to this in was created by just an idea that somebody had. And so I've been fortunate enough in my career. When I was in high school, I knew I wanted to do something with tech, right? And I didn't know what that was. I knew I wanted to do something with tech. But the great thing about tech, being creative in tech, I always felt like because things changed so much, you had this opportunity to get creative all the time, right? Just think about podcasts, right? That didn't exist how many years ago. I remember the first podcasts, listening to those on one of my original, it wasn't even an iPhone. It was like an MP3. You remember the MP3 player that you could download? And I would download tracks and kind of listen to that. And so I think that the creative process is all about not accepting for face value the way things are done and how you can do things a better way. And so I go through life where I'm always asking why. And I started out my career working for a bunch of different companies, and I realized early on that not everybody reacts well to that why, right? Creative people do. You can get into the discussion, but I think if you're working inside a large organization and you're asking why, people want to see the value in it and what's the next thing. And so for me, I've just made this career out of following what I felt was a better way of doing stuff. And so that meant in the early days how you wrote software. Then it meant web, you know, writing some of the first HTML pages and doing some of the first e-commerce. And I'm like, there's a better way to sell things, right? And then doing mobile, and now it's led me to Amazon with voice. You know, what does it mean to have a conversation with our technology? And so that's been my approach to the creative process.
Great. Yeah, it's interesting. You touched on a point that seemed to allude to the struggle with change, and that the creative thought process really pushes a person to not be satisfied with the status quo if they feel that it can be changed and improve upon. And you have a famous quote that, you know, the most dangerous phrase is we've always done it that way. And if that was something that became a true motto in the world, a lot of the things that we take for granted wouldn't exist, and we'd still have an Iceman, a milkman, and be driving around in a horse-drawn carriage, right?
Yeah, totally. And for me, you know, it's like I get bored very easily. When I was little, my friends, they always used to call it Izbitsky burnout, where I would get like so excited about something and I'd get everybody else excited around me. And then one day I'd be like, this is stupid. There's a better way to do it. And nobody else wanted to move on. Right. And they all felt like I had swindled them. But for me, it was because I was like, you know, just look, this is so much cooler. This is just way better to do it. And it's to, I like how you said, you know, it's not just being, ever being satisfied. And for me, so, you know, I can tell, like, I start to get sad. I don't know about you guys, but like, before I create something awesome is usually when I feel the, like, I'm worthless. It's this really weird process where, like, I'm down in the dumps and I'm like, I've been doing the same thing and anybody can do what I do and I need to do this a better way and I need to think of, wait, like, how do I do the next big thing? And then that's usually where I have, like, this moment of enlightened, you know, thinking and looking at stuff differently. And so I know if I'm in kind of a routine and I'm doing the same thing all the time, it's very rare for me to be creative. In fact, I run from process. You know, I know some people are wired for process. They love being in meetings all day. They love, you know, organizing and creating teams and doing all that. And for me, that's like, I intentionally run from that because I feel like it doesn't allow me to get creative.
That's great. All right. So Ariel has a second question that I think builds on that.
So strategies do you think are important to stand out in your field of business?
Oh, let me think. So regardless of where you've been, so I when I started my career, it was the start of the internet. So when I graduated, I started working professionally right around when Windows 95 was rolling out. And there was just this, I was an intern and people would, because I get, you know, I mentor a lot of folks and they're always like, you know, what value can I bring? And I think it's how you're viewing the world. I love, the biggest compliment I've ever gotten from my daughter, who's a teen herself, is that I'm like the world's biggest teenager. And I take that as I view everything as everybody can bring value, right? It doesn't matter your age. It matters what your insight. And so what I find in large enterprises, and this is certainly the case with Amazon, is that the influx of people coming in with new ideas and a new way of looking at things is huge. And so if you're looking at how do you bring value to a business, I think most brands that I talk to today, like if I take voice, right, people are still trying to figure it out. What does this next wave mean? You know, I just did mobile. I just did social. How do I reach people and what are people using today? And so the way that you bring value is kind of not have this jaded insight. It's to have this innovative spirit. It's not to be afraid to fail, to go ahead and to try things new. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things you can bring to any company. And when I started out my career, I didn't join one company. I did consulting. I wanted to see what were all of the different cultures like. Because depending on where you work, if you work at an agency, if you're in a startup, if you have your own business, if you're doing something online, or if you're working in kind of a 9-to-5 job, all of those organizations are going to have their own culture. They're going to have their own ways that people to connect. They're going to have different types of mobility, right? If you're in a very large company, it does not guarantee mobility. So for example, Amazon is a very – our levels are very wide. There's not a lot of hierarchy between people and Jeff. And I love that, right? It means I can kind of go and talk to anybody I need to at Amazon. But it also means there's not a lot of levels for quote unquote like title advancement, which was something that was never really huge for me. I was always more about impact and who I'm working with. But there are other companies where you can do that, right? You start out and, you know, because I always have conversations with people. They're like, I've been at this company 2 years and I don't have a promotion. It's like, well, what does that give you? Like, what does that mean? Are you trying to prove something to somebody? Is it a status? Do you feel like you're not being heard? Is it a money thing? Because there's a million ways to make money. And so that is in any kind of big company where you're going to bring value in that is your new insight, how you look at things, and how you mesh with that culture. Number one thing is culture. You'll find out right away, by the way, early on, if you just keep thinking of better ways to do things, you're either a leader or an entrepreneur. If you keep thinking about how can you be part of something bigger, then you want to be in a company that has a lot of resources and a lot of different people that you can work with. And so those first couple of years working with any big company is figuring that out.
That's great. So I have three really interesting things that I pulled from your thoughts just now. So the first is that idea of what one of the strategies is the way that you bring value. And one of the challenges that school doesn't necessarily give an opportunity for the students to engage in is that it's not just enough to do the status quo. It's not enough to just show up and do the ABC if that's what you're required to do. It's the people that are doing the DEF and beyond that really start to thrive. And just to add on to that, I'm curious your thoughts because, that concept of value mixed in with your early experiences as a consultant, you have the statistic that by 2020, 40% of Americans are going to be independent contractors, this idea of the gig economy that's about to have a huge surge. So I'm wondering for these high school students and really anyone that's listening to this, because I hope that the audience is, it goes beyond that. But what do you think about when you see that the value in going above and beyond and also that opportunity to have a really broad level of experience because you're choosing to be a consultant or a contractor?
Yeah, it's... This is my take. Everybody's going to have a different take on this, and companies are going to feel different about this. Where I see an employee versus a consultant, a lot of times it's a domain-specific area of expertise. So if it's tech, it's I'm great at social media, or I'm great at programming in Python and Node, or I really know this JavaScript framework, right? It's somebody who can plug in for 3 months and go heads down deep. It's knowledge that corporation doesn't have. I find where a lot of companies look for employees is someone who's going to grow with the company. How well do they work with others? Consensus building is a huge skill. This is why I talk to my teen a lot about this because, she questions a lot of things too. And if I looked back at school, to me, there's really two things that have always been invaluable for me throughout my entire career. And I feel it takes a long time in order to gain these because as you're going through school, you're also growing and maturing as a young adult. And so your outlook and your emotional maturity and all of that changes over time. But there's two things I think are hugely important. The first is consensus building. I could tell you that in the real world, you do get stuck with people with all different personality types. And hopefully you're working for a company that has very diverse teams. So there's different backgrounds, different ways of looking at the world. And everybody's coming to it with a different opinion. And so how do you not only be respectful and accepting of others in that situation. But how do you thrive in that situation? How do you inspire the group? And consensus building is the ability to bring those teams together. School can teach you that. School can be, you could be thrust in a project with three other people and you know that you're the only person pulling weight. And so you either make a decision, you either start pointing fingers or you help inspire the others and elevate it. And teachers are smart. They will put, my youngest one, this happens all the time. And she's a very good student. And she gets upset sometimes when she's put with different people. And I'm like, honey, the teacher put you there because you're going to elevate. And that's a skill you need to recognize, is it's not just about you. This world is very rarely about you. And the workplace is very rarely about you. So how do you elevate those around you? And then the second is this love of learning. Because especially in the technical field, what I knew 2 years ago, most of it's completely irrelevant from an academic standpoint. It's the theory of it, the how do you figure out what are the impacts of something, right? If it's a transformational technical shift, what does that mean for people? What does it mean for businesses? And how everybody approaches that a little bit different, right? So school teaches that too, is this love of bettering yourself, of learning, of figuring it out. And by the way, that can also be questioning curriculum. I used to do this when I was little. I shouldn't say little, probably like sixth grade. And I remember being in sixth grade and they didn't have a computer science program. There was no computers or anything. And they had just gotten one in the class, and the teacher used it as a way to make videos. It was like it started out in the AV club, right? So he would plug in a camera to this Commodore computer. Mr. Emery, if you ever hear this, mad props to you for bringing that first computer into the classroom in sixth grade. And I was at home reading books about how to code these things, and I remember thinking, the potential is wasted if we're just using the monitor, you know, the computer's monitor as a way to show video. I'm like, I can show people how to do this. And I remember talking to him about it. He's like, okay, well, you show everybody. And so I kind of put together just a little lesson on what does it mean to write a computer program. And back then it was basic, but it was, you know, The ability to learn, if you can learn quick and you have a love of learning, you're going to be able to teach others. And that's going to naturally lead you to being a better consensus builder and getting along with others as well.
That's great. So my next question has sort of two parts. And it's sort of around the evolution of audio. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is super big on audio. He says audio is that this next wave of innovative experience in which technology is going to just totally evolve the world as we know it. And I'm curious to hear your insights, obviously, because you're part of one of the companies that is thriving in the space and leading the way. But what I'm curious to hear about where you see technology evolving with audio in the next 5 to 10 years is really, how is this going to change our ability to communicate with others and the ability for people to learn on the fly? Gary V always says that, you know, you'll be brushing your teeth and you'll say, hey, give me the Gary V top tip for the day. And Alexa's going to pop up as I'm brushing my teeth and getting, you know, this information. And that might just become something that's just part of life, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. So what are your thoughts on where it's going and where you might see it getting to in the next 5 to 10?
Yeah, totally. You know, shout out to Gary. He had invited me to VoiceCon just last week. So I got to hang out with him. I did a panel on measuring voice and conversational experiences. And you know, his mindset and my mindset are alike in that voice is going to impact everybody, everywhere, on everything. I don't think people get that yet. I think people are using voice on their mobile device as a way to dictate and translate. But when you have a device, whether it's, you know, whether it's a Google Assistant or it's a HomePod or it's an Alexa device, once you get to the point that computing becomes ambient, it doesn't become this device that you carry around in your pocket or that you're holding in your hands. It becomes this way that at any time you can just have a conversation with the technology around you, whether that's in your car, in your home, at work, school, like you said, either I'm in the bathroom. When you think of just like thinking of something and you can ask for it instantly and you can get an answer, that changes things. I had tweeted out a couple days ago, and it was funny saying this happens to them too. You know, I have the date right at the top on my Mac. I'm looking at it right now. And yet if I'm writing an intensive email or I'm concentrating on a Word doc where my brain is actively running that context, it's easier for me to just ask what time it is than to look at the actual time and process that. And that's because our brains process visual information very different than auditory information. And so having conversations with the technology in which we live is going to impact all of that. And I think the jobs of the future, like if we look 10 years down the road, it's really going to be the people who can work alongside these AIs that are going to be in high demand, because there are going to be specific AI domain focused areas. You look at medical research and other areas where an AI can do the work of what it would have taken other researchers to do a year, they can do in a day, right? It's these very intensive, methodical, data-driven tasks. Machines are very good at recognizing patterns and things like that. When I have the ability to just talk and as a human being have the ideas, but command all of that power that the AI is going to bring is at my fingertips, those are going to be some really amazing experiences. I have this, and I've said this publicly before, I'll say it again. I have this dream. This isn't a roadmap or anything with Amazon, but I have this dream where it's like Star Trek, that at any time, anybody, if you have an idea, you just tell the AI to go and code it, right? Alexa has over 40,000 skills today. I feel like she should know if I ask her to do something that she can.
That's great. My follow-up question on that, it sort of goes in a direction of as AI evolves and voice evolves and we become more productive and more efficient and these devices really take on a role of a support for us, it's going to, while some people want to phrase it in the negative that jobs will be lost and there's so many negative ramifications from AI, I feel that AI will create an opportunity where people will have an opportunity to engage and interact in a different way. And I think that goes back to that communication level of skills that you had mentioned earlier about the importance of that, that, you know, it's not necessarily that students and young people don't know how to collaborate. It's that they're lacking this fundamental communication ability. And it's because verbal and visual communications are not as emphasized as much as writing. So maybe you could weigh in on why you think that verbal communication is such a critical component as technology evolves.
Well, it's super interesting because we live in the written age and there's so many, it's almost like the written word today is subjective because there's so many ways to interpret and with social media and everything else going on there, very few people believe what they're reading at face value. In fact, I am of this belief that a lot of them may have not even read it. They'll just share something out if it confirms their own biases, which we have a tendency. I mean, human beings have been doing that since the beginning of time, right? But what used to happen when we were an oratory society, I mean, you go back before the printing press, you just go back 150 years, talk was not cheap. Meaning, if you said something that was inaccurate, the people around you corrected you. You couldn't just go blabbing. It was hugely important for us as human beings. And that's the way that we transfer down our history and our who we were, right? And you look at the specifics of how language has evolved. I mean, unlike the written word, there are – this is what I love about language is there's etiquette. You go into other countries, there's a certain pause that needs to happen. you know, people don't talk over each other like they usually do in the US. You go to Japan, for instance, where, you know, if you're not waiting until that person has finished, I mean, that conversation is moot. And so AI needs to understand that as well. It needs to understand the culture of the day, because there's subconscious bias. If you think about what if an AI was made 200 years ago, what would have been its view on, you know, just gender inequality and people, right? It needs the ability to adapt, because we adapt and evolve as a culture and a society. And then the second part of your question about jobs and, you know, things going away is, the truth of the matter is jobs always go away. If remove technology from the equation, right? Jobs always go away. Jobs are always created. It's an opportunity. It's as new things occur, and as human beings are interested in new things and we find better ways of doing things, jobs shift. New jobs are created. Old jobs go away. And technology is no different. You know, there was a time when I remember just getting on the internet, right? People made products for connecting to the internet. And now it's just there in your house, right? Now there's Wi-Fi. It's always been that way. I think the amount of new areas that are being created now, I always tell this to my kids, is that the role that I did, you know, this technical evangelist role that I do, this didn't exist. I mean, I've been doing it for 11 years. It's maybe been around 14, 15 years max, and it didn't exist before that. So I couldn't have gone to college for it. When I look at AI and machine learning and all of these other areas that are now being opened up, I don't think any of us can think of the type of jobs that are going to exist in the future that are going to be in high demand. I can tell you my opinion is that they'll involve working closely with AIs. People who have the ability to know how to work with an AI and apply that human intelligence to it, the human creativity, are going to be in high demand, are going to be very successful. Almost like I remember in the early, as desktop computing started to take over, people who had office skills, that was a big deal. You know, I could do Microsoft Word or I could do Microsoft Excel. The fact that you know about AIs and can speak with AIs is going to be something that will be in high demand as well. So I think it's something I can't wait to see the types of things my kids are doing.
So our last question is beyond the test. What is the one skill or area of knowledge that high school students need to have to be successful?
So you mean life skills? I think it's related back to what I talked about is, and I'll elaborate a little more on it. So it's irrelevant of what domain-specific knowledge you get in high school, because it's not preparing you for your career. It's teaching you to learn. It's giving you a general baseline education. You know, you're not going to learn how to be an amazing lawyer in high school. You could go watch YouTube videos and probably learn more about that specific domain, right? The life skills that you need, which I iterated a little bit on earlier, you know, understanding and being able to inspire and build consensus around fellow human beings, and then a love of learning, to me are absolutely key to success. But I would say the third thing is that, and Gary Vee says this too, and I'll give him, you know, because this is one of my favorite things that he says to younger folks, and I completely agree, and I tell my kids the same thing, is that you could completely mess up for the next 20 years coming out of high school and still be the biggest success the world's ever seen. And that is something that I think, if you have that in your head, if you're listening to this and you're like, you know, by the time I'm 20, I need this, and 25, I need this, and 30, I need this, forget all about that. The time that you have now is about figuring yourself out, figuring the world out, figuring the opportunities out. Don't even put a measuring stick towards what you're doing yet. You know, there's no success. To me, the only way you can be successful in that is you're continuing to learn. That's really the only metric. And I, you know, I just kind of stumbled into that pattern myself because coming into the field in the mid-90s with the rise of the internet and everything else and choosing a career where I was a consultant allowed me to never be at like a singular company where I would say, oh, I'm successful because I've been promoting to this and I have this team. I never had that. It was every 6 months I was working on this new thing that nobody ever saw before and trying to figure that out, right? And because of that, I learned so much about myself and about all of these different types of businesses and all the different types of people that you would meet. And during that time, I also had friends who decided to become entrepreneurs, you know? And so I knew that wasn't me. I loved working with new stuff, but I liked being part of something bigger. The whole process of owning my own company was never something that, I felt drawn to. But I did see people who figured that out because they realized they couldn't work for anybody else. And they had this amazing idea that they wanted to get out there. And so that would be my biggest piece of advice. The three skills, if you're not thinking about this in school today, is, you know, a love of learning, the ability to consensus build and inspire others, and don't start measuring your success. It kills me, even with my own kids, when they'll say something, you know, everybody says it sometimes, or they'll say, oh, I'm stupid, or I'm just an average student. I'm like, what is an average student, right? That's the biggest fallacy I've ever heard. How could you be average and figure that out at that age, right? It's inconsequential. You're still learning about yourself. And so that's what I would say. Just continue to give yourself that time to learn, to grow. And the amount of new areas, because once you have that mindset, you're not afraid to take on these new areas. Don't be like 25 and say, oh, I can't go take this a chance on switching to that type of career path because I'm set over here, right? I switched, 2007. So we're talking 11 years ago. So I was 33. I was 33 years old when I did a completely new career path, and I'm doing what I do now. And I still felt like I had plenty of time.
Well, I want to thank you. I think your insights were powerful, and the audience will, without question, get some incredible insights as they are looking at not just what to do now, but as you said, what to do 10 years from now, and how the world and life is not this linear one-stop shop. So if people want to connect with you, which I know that they will, and I hope that they will, what is the best way to reach out and connect with you? Social, website, you want to share that with us?
Yeah, I'm just the Dave Dev. So DAVEDEV, the. On Twitter, you can go to thedavedev.com. That'll show you links to everything that I'm doing, including my podcast. And you can hit up my podcast at alexadevchat.com, but you'll see it on thedavedev.com as well. Kind of one-stop shop.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being.
If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. If you could rate and subscribe in iTunes, that would be amazing.
For sneak peeks and to recommend a guest, follow us on Instagram at Beyond the Test Podcast. New episodes drop every Wednesday. Thanks so much for listening and thinking
Beyond the Test.